and time for day two of Symphony Week, and let's go back to a wonderful evening in November of 2007 and hear some great sounds that took place in a very old but very new location. A great old Spokane tradition, Spokane Symphony tradition, the national anthem used to open a season, and in this case, the first sounds heard in the Martin Woldson Theater at the Fox in its reopening. Appropriately enough, not only great playing, but great singing from this capacity audience. So that was the broadcast from November of 2007, when that great event of the reopening of the Fox had taken place. We're going to spend time here on Symphony Week with the Fox, and in so many aspects of the importance and the significance and the value of that location to music making in Spokane. But we're going to go to the beginning. Joan Dagerstrom was there in 1931 when the Fox Theater opened. First, good morning, Joan, and welcome.
Good morning, Brian.
And let's jump right in on this. You were how old?
I was eight.
You were eight. Mm-hmm. And do you actually remember the event, not just that you've been told about it, but you remember being there?
Oh, yes, I remember it. It was exciting standing in the street. They had people standing up on the roof there, that one corner that's low, so everybody could see, and they had a loudspeaker system, and I don't remember who they were, but...
As in, like, famous movie stars or somebody like that?
Could be. I don't remember that they were famous, and there was one little girl, and I don't remember who she was either, but it wasn't anybody I knew.
Yeah. So then, and then when they had the dedication, then did everybody go inside for all kinds of ceremonies?
I don't know whether we didn't, but whether people went in to see a movie, I'm not sure.
But it was just simply this civic event of being on the street to see.
Oh, it was a big deal.
Yeah. So what went on? You say they had speeches and things like that?
Yes, they had speakers and telling about the Fox, about the theater, what it was. And, of course, it was such a new building at that time. The design of the building was entirely different, and I didn't go inside then, but it wasn't too long after that I went to a movie, and it was just awesome.
I can imagine. Well, keeping with the idea of the Fox being built, there's a lot made over the fact that it was built during the Depression.
Yes.
And so that must have been, was it kind of a moment of real uplift for Spokane that they had this?
Well, it was wonderful to have that beautiful theater, but I don't remember about the Depression particularly.
Kids don't notice that so much, do
no.
they? Yeah. Yeah, and but there was that theater. Well, then talk about going to a movie at the theater at the Fox when it was first opened.
The Fox played all the first run. Yeah, the main movies, and they would have two movies. There would be a main movie, and then they would have a second movie. And then they'd have a newsreel, and then they'd have a cartoon. So, and that was the only news that people got, really.
Sure.
Visual news was in the movies. And I remember they had some seats on the right-hand side along the aisle that had earphones, because my grandmother, when I went with her, she would use the earphones. And then at the back of the theater, they had some what they called loge seats that were big, nice, comfortable seats. And I don't recall that you had to pay extra to sit there, but it was way at the back. And usually going to a movie, I'd like to sit sort of in the center, in the middle. Mm-hmm. I didn't like to sit too close because you'd have to look
sure.
up.
But it was this big screen that alone must have been
right.
really exciting.
Yeah. Well, of course, we had the State Theater
and the
Liberty Theater mm-hmm. by the Crescent, which had big screens, but this was different. Mm-hmm. It was, and they didn't play the movie so loud then as they do.
Sure, yeah. Now, also, in addition to movies, over the years, famous people did concerts at the Fox. Did you ever attend any one of those concerts as a famous performer?
I remember Van Cliburn, because I took my daughter. She was, I think, 7 or 8 at the time, because she was taking piano lessons. Mm. And we went backstage, and she got his autograph.
Oh, that's exciting.
And Seattle used to bring an opera over for part of the season mm-hmm. every year. I remember La Boheme, which mm-hmm. had the snow falling. And they had some Broadway plays that they brought, too. Mm. They didn't have the stage facilities, probably, that they have now. But they still were able, because it was built as a movie theater.
Sure.
But they did have a green room and rooms in the back, so that...
So the dressing rooms and the things they would need. But there were other concerts there. Patrice Mansell did a concert there. And we have at home a newspaper clipping for Jeanette MacDonald.
I remember Jeanette MacDonald. She was in the... Davenport lobby before she went over, and I got close enough to touch her fur coat. And she was a little short thing, and so was Nelson Eddy. They were both quite short. Mm-hmm. But, she was one of my favorites because mm-hmm. of her movies, all the movies with Nelson Eddy.
Oh, sure. But she did do a voice recital in
yes,
the Fox.
She did.
I think it was May of 1939 or something.
Yes.
Right around there. That she did that. And then there was that first iteration in which the Spokane Symphony played in the Fox. Do you remember going to the symphony in the late 60s, early 70s when the symphony played in the Fox?
Well, yes, because I used to get season tickets and take one of my daughters, usually my youngest daughter, and we'd sit up close so she could watch the instruments. And she was always the first one up the aisle during intermission to get a glass of soda.
Mm-hmm. And so the symphony concerts were there, and even then the symphony sounded really great in the Fox, didn't it? I mean, it was just a great place for the symphony to play, wasn't it?
Well, of course. It was it sounded wonderful to us.
Sure.
And I really really loved the symphony then, and it's always been a favorite.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about when the symphony returned to the Fox. I assume you were there on that November night in 2007
yes.
when it reopened. Well,
yes.
What do you remember about that event?
I don't know. Everyone was so thrilled at the restoration.
Mm-hmm.
It was perfect. And that's about all I remember particularly about it. Everybody was so thrilled, and everybody was... so anxious to, so thrilled that the symphony could handle that.
Yeah,
and
that it had happened. Yeah.
Walker Construction did such a beautiful job of restoring it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
let's bring somebody who had some of that responsibility on him one way or another, Bill Simer. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Vern.
And Bill Simer, who has been involved with many civic things, certainly with this station, but with the symphony in many ways. What was your exact role with the restoration of the Fox?
You know, Vern, I really divide the Fox restoration into three pieces, if you will. There's the Save the Fox part where, mm-hmm. you know, we had the opportunity to step in and get the contract away from the Spokane Club, who had the contract to buy it, and they were gracious in that. And that was the part where I had the greatest role and able to, with the symphony, I was on their board and assembled a group of other board members and supporters that came in and did some due diligence to see if the bones in that building were as solid as we thought they were, mm-hmm. and if we could come up with a business model that would work, and then talk about, was the budget, you know, attainable? Could we raise that kind of money? Mm-hmm. And so that was really the portion that I was directly involved in the leadership of. And then you move into the actual restoration of the theater after the plans are. And I somewhat had stepped back because I'd moved into the role as chair of the symphony at that mm-hmm. point. And so Pete Moyer and others moved into that role. And then the third piece, of course, is the operation of the theater once you have it done. And three very distinctly different yeah. parts. But certainly in the Save the Fox piece, it was an incredible opportunity to connect with this community that loved that theater. And Joan, just to hear your tales of going to the theater on the opening day and in subsequent years, it kind of rekindles all of that, because we had a lot of those discussions. We talked to people like then Ambassador Foley, who would tell us that he had to carry his birth certificate with him to prove that he was young enough to pay for a child seat, because apparently he was large for his age. He was tall. So John Hancock, who was then the executive director of the symphony, and I flew back to Washington, D.C. in a somewhat naive attempt to raise money for the theater. And he was kind enough to meet with us and spend time with us and recount stories and of his memories of the building and how it was really a central part of the fabric mm-hmm. of this community. So being there at that time gave you the opportunity to rekindle those stories and to work with the community to raise the money to buy it. Mm-hmm. And then there was the phone call from Ms. Wolfson's representatives, who we didn't know who she was, but early on say that she wants to buy the theater. I have a client who would like to buy the theater for you. You know, and my mother always taught me to be polite mm-hmm. and assume the best of people, because I didn't know who this gentleman really was or if he truly represented someone of substance. But it quickly moved from the $1 million to buy the theater that would not be sufficient enough to own the naming rights to a $3 million contribution. And ultimately, Ms. Wolfson's came through with that gift, $1 million up front, irrevocable gift, $2 million as a match, that she was very generous in allowing us to apply state money to that match. And it was central to restoring the theater, acquiring the theater, and then restoring it.
Well, and as you and I know from our more recent experience with restoring this building, where KPB, where Spokane Public Radio is, there's a lot of nail biting and hoping and wishing and hoping for that phone call and wondering, can we make a match? And a lot of stuff on the way to the fundraising for that, isn't there?
There is, and I think we would often talk about there's risk with getting out of bed in the morning, because we knew this was a high risk proposition. Mm-hmm. We were taking on a big liability that buying a theater was just a small part. Restoring it and then operating it would be some Herculean task. And yet we were confident that we could. Maybe we were naive to believe we could do it. But I think naivety has a role in a lot of success stories and certainly in some mm-hmm. failures. But here it was successful. Mm-hmm. And to be there opening night and then the subsequent concerts, Tony Bennett is the one that I think of when he turns off his mic and sings a cappella. As I recall him talking about it, he said, you know, all across the country, people are tearing these theaters down, and you've saved one. And let me just show you how good it really is. And he turns off the mic and sings a cappella. And it was just an amazing moment in the hall, and frankly, one that I still get chills as I think about it. And he proved the concept that, yes, we had done something good, and it worked.
Well, that was there's always that, as you say, the risk, the thought, how good would it be? Those of us who had played in it previously knew it was pretty good. But then it turned out even better beyond, I think, anybody's dreams. As part of that, there were certain times you had to, I'm speaking with Bill Simer, who was involved with that first round of Saving the Fox, that you had to make some hard decisions of how big to make that project. There was some thought of trying to use the whole block and have all kinds of rehearsal rooms and things like that. But the one I want to focus in on, was there a discussion of whether to save those seats under the balcony or give up the seating for other reasons? Were you part of that?
Yes, I was. And, you know, certainly, Vern, you balance a lot of things when you're dealing with those types of decisions. And certainly one of those points was the acoustics of the building. The seats underneath the balcony did not have wonderful acoustics. Mm-hmm. And looking at the business model, we needed more space to be able to hold other events. And so the two of those considerations really led us to the decision that those seats needed to go. We needed to open up additional gallery space, and we would improve the acoustics. And frankly, the business model, the number of seats you could effectively sell in a concert or another event also supported that decision. But it was a hard one because mm-hmm. people were passionate about the way that building was originally built. And there were things, compromises we needed to make mm-hmm. along the way, as in any big project.
But as Joan has already expressed, it was so thrilling just to walk in on that November night and see just really how beautiful the whole thing was.
It was, and Vern, I'd like to just recount two other brief stories. Mm-hmm. One is that when Fabio Michetti was then the music director of the symphony, there was some concern by reasonable people that we were biting off of something very, very large, that it may impact the symphony. And
should a symphony be in the business of running a theater? That was the way
absolutely,
I heard it expressed.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think Fabio was at first somewhat cautious. But I was there in the hall when he walked in for the symphony, for a symphony rehearsal for the thank you concert after the community had bought the theater and Miss Wolfson had come up with her initial gift. And he heard the symphony warming up, and he turned to me and said, "This isn't just a building, it's an instrument." Mm-hmm. And he felt that the intimacy of the building and the sound that the orchestra was able to produce in it gave rise to really justification for the risk, and that we should go ahead and do it. And the other little piece I'd like to just share with you is that as the symphony board was weighing all of these decisions, do we go forward, do we not, looking at the business plan and trying to get you know their hands around what we were taking on and the argument that you've just articulated, should the symphony be in the business of owning a hall, Father Spitzer of Gonzaga, then president of Gonzaga, was on our board. And I have to say he was visionary at many things in his community, but he sat down, looked at the business plan that day, and he raised his hand, asked to be recognized, and he said, "Folks, this is a no-brainer. You can do this." And he said, "Yes, there's risk involved in it, but it's risk that's calculated, and it's risk you can assume." And I think it's fair to say that without his support in that meeting, we might have come up with a different decision. So that was another pivotal moment in there, along with, you know, Maestro Michetti hearing the orchestra play in there, and certainly Ms. Wolfson's representatives, mm-hmm. Ms. Wolfson stepping up and saying, "I want to take an active role in this." Several pivotal points early on that really led us to where we are and led us to that opening night when mm-hmm. the Restored Theater was back in our community and back for another 70 or 100 years before we needed to address it again.
Yeah. And we just heard that's Bill Simer about those getting it going, and we just heard the Star-Spangled Banner from that opening night.